from London, BBC Caribbean Report.
The latest Atlantic tropical storm keeps residents in the southeastern Caribbean on guard. Barbados's Deputy Prime Minister is a member for Commonwealth Mission to help restore democratic rule in Pakistan, and the former Netherlands Antilles Prime Minister has 2 weeks to get a central government in place. I am Keith Stone-Graves, and this is BBC Caribbean Report. Residents in the southeastern Caribbean are this evening keeping a close watch on Tropical Storm Jose, the 10th weather system to form in the Atlantic this season. Forecasters at the National Hurricane Center in Miami believe it could reach hurricane status within the next few days. The system is expected to bring heavy rain and possible flooding to low-lying areas of the island chain, stretching from the Windward Islands southwards to Trinidad. We'll be talking to a Caribbean weather expert in Port of Spain in just a moment. But first, our Barbados correspondent, Bertram Nas, reports on how residents are preparing for the storm.
Barbadians flocked to supermarkets and gas stations to stock up on supplies. As forecasters said, the island should begin experiencing rough weather on Tuesday afternoon. Hurricane shelters were being readied and schools were ordered to close Tuesday. Jose is expected to pass 30 miles to the south of Barbados early Wednesday morning, with forecast models predicting that it will be a Category 1 hurricane at minimal strength of about 75 miles per hour at that time. Director of Emergency Services Clive Lord said that while it wasn't a major system, Jose had the potential to cause major damage, particularly flooding. Most Barbadians have never experienced a major hurricane, with Janet the last of recent memory in 1955, although a glancing blow from Allen in 1980 resulted in a record $13 million Barbados dollars in damage to housing, agriculture, and infrastructure. Janet of 55 also hit Grenada, which is now under a storm watch for Jose, with other islands in the Windward chain advised to monitor the system's progress. Forecasters say that on its present path, Jose could reach the vicinity of Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands Friday. Bertrand Miles in Bridgetown for BBC Caribbean Report.
Well, it's been 11 years since a tropical storm affected Trinidad and Tobago. That was Tropical Storm Joan. Director of the Trinidad and Tobago Meteorological Service, Eli Henry, told me this latest weather system is somewhat surprising for the Twin Island Republic coming so late in the season.
At this time of the season, one expects the Cape Verde-type systems or tropical cyclones to be on the wane rather than obviously being as active as they are.
Your advice for the people of Trinidad and Tobago and the Grenadines?
At 8 o'clock this morning, we put the country and Grenada and its dependency under tropical storm watch. This was, to some extent, a sort of worst-case scenario, taking note of the definition of what a tropical storm watch is. That is, it must at least be 24 to 36 hours away from affecting the targeted landmass. But within the last few hours, the system has begun to shift towards the west-northwest, and it appears that this shift in direction would take the system north of Trinidad and Tobago, and it may then pose some threat towards islands Grenada northward.
Could this be seen as an unusual hurricane season? So many storms to the northern Caribbean and now Tropical Storm Jose heading as far south as Trinidad and Tobago.
Based on the predictors that are used by Professor Bill Gray, it appears that the number of storms so far for this season is well within his predictive capability for this year. Jose is now the 10th storm of the season, and he has predicted 14 named storms. I'm sure that he would feel that his prediction is validated at the end of the season.
Eli Henry. Meanwhile, the presidents from the Central American countries devastated by Hurricane Mitch last year have begun a two-day summit in Guatemala City. It's expected to focus on ways of reducing the region's vulnerability to natural disasters. The hurricane killed an estimated 9,000 people, left hundreds of thousands homeless, and put back the local economies several years at least. The Caribbean will be represented on a special Commonwealth mission to Pakistan to meet with the military regime in the country following the overthrow of the elected government. This was one of the decisions taken at a one-day special meeting of the Commonwealth Ministerial Action Group on the Harare Declaration. The group's meeting at the Commonwealth Secretariat in London was chaired by Zimbabwe's Foreign Affairs Minister, Dr. Mudenge.
CIMAC unanimously condemned the unconstitutional overthrow of the democratically elected government of Pakistan as a serious violation of the Commonwealth's fundamental political principles as enshrined in the Harare Commonwealth Declaration. The group decided, therefore, that the Pakistan military regime should forthwith be suspended from the councils of the Commonwealth, including the forthcoming Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting Chogham, pending the restoration of democracy in the country.
In a moment, we'll be talking to Billy Miller, Barbados's Deputy Prime Minister and Minister of Foreign Affairs, who was present at today's meeting. The group's recommendation to suspend Pakistan has to be approved by the Commonwealth Heads of Government. Sunday's nationwide television address by the country's military leader, General Pervez Musharraf, in which he promised to return democracy without laying down a deadline, has been widely judged to be insufficient. The decision of the group to recommend the suspension of Pakistan was reaffirmed by the Commonwealth Secretary General, Chief Emeka Anyoku, when he spoke to journalists in London.
And the implications of that suspension are detailed out. The suspension from membership of the Commonwealth is a decision which heads of government alone will make. And they will make that on the basis of recommendations from this CIMAC group in the light of the mission which it's sending to Pakistan.
The mission to Islamabad will leave towards the end of this month and is expected to have a report ready for the Commonwealth Heads of Government by November 9th in Durban, South Africa. It will be chaired by Canada's Foreign Minister, Lloyd Axworthy. Apart from Barbados, the other members of this special Commonwealth mission are the foreign ministers of Ghana and Malaysia. I spoke to Billy Miller of Barbados after the meeting. She told me why it's so important to maintain the democratic process.
CIMAG has to be consistent. We have a specific remit from the heads of Commonwealth governments, and we have brought that remit to bear in terms of the Harare principles, rule of law, democracy, free and fair elections, good governance, generally speaking. We brought it to bear in Nigeria and in Sierra Leone and the Gambia. We really, in my judgment, had no options here. The Harare principles were clear. The declaration of emergency was explicit in what it said, and we had to apply the principles, and that's what we did. That's not enough. We go in, as we did elsewhere now, to make our assessment and to make our recommendation to the heads.
In short, there's no room for compromise on the issue of democracy.
No. We can't negotiate on these issues. Can't.
Barbados's Deputy Prime Minister, Billy Miller. Caribbean leaders are being taken to task by one of their own for ignoring African-American legislators who stand ready to influence U.S. government policy affecting the region. At a just-ended conference in St. Croix, members of the U.S. Congressional Black Caucus reported their willingness to help counter the negative effects of recent legislation affecting the Caribbean. But as Bevan Springer reports from New York, Caribbean leaders have not yet responded to their northern neighbors' outstretched arms.
Speaking at the 4th annual New York Carib News Multinational Business Conference, Barbados's Deputy Prime Minister Billy Miller criticized the Caribbean leaders for their sluggishness in developing closer relations with members of the U.S. Congressional Black Caucus. Members of the caucus have expressed a desire to serve as intermediaries to voice concerns of Caribbean nations and the large Caribbean American constituencies they serve. Such issues include the continuing decline in the banana industry and recent policies allowing deportation of hardened criminals. Congressional members argued that their efforts would be much more effective if Caribbean leaders better understood the scope of the caucus's power and influence. Ms. Miller reasoned that the absence of communication has retarded the region's growth. While there was a strong delegation of African-American congressmen and women in St. Croix, not a single CARICOM head of state attended, sorely disappointing U.S. legislators. St. Lucia's Minister of Tourism, Philip J. Pierre, observed that as a matter of tradition, years of colonialism have kept the Caribbean tied to England, and a shift in paradigm is necessary. One of the goals of the conference was to promote a clearer understanding of the complex issues facing the Caribbean and to establish productive relationships between two groups of political leaders with so little, yet so much in common. Bevan Springer in New York City for BBC Caribbean Report.
And you're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. In Guyana, High Court Judge Winston Moore has refused to grant an application for the continuation of the stay of execution for two condemned murderers, Abdul Yassin and Noel Thomas. On the day before Thomas and Yassin were scheduled to be hanged on September 12th, their lawyers obtained a court order which prevented their execution. Defense attorneys argue that their executions should be set aside because, among other matters, the Mercy Committee, which advises the president, was not properly constituted. The condemned men had earlier appealed to the United Nations Human Rights Commission, who had recommended that they be set free. The judge rejected all the arguments of the lawyers for the convicted killers, but granted them leave to file an appeal against his ruling on a 45-day stay of execution for Thomas and Yassin. The governor of the Netherlands Antilles, Jaime Sale, has told the former Prime Minister, Miguel Poirier, to form a new government within the next 14 days. It follows the recent collapse of the central government with a public sector debt of some $2 billion. When we spoke to Mr. Poirier last week, he outlined what was needed almost immediately to get things back on track.
The first priority is to take care of the island government, because the island government of Curaçao, it's very fundamental for the formation of a central government. So at this moment, we are talking about a formation of a new government at the island level of Curaçao and with the intention to go on.
Miguel Poirier, but what are some of the challenges and obstacles facing the man chosen to form the next government? Mike Jarvis has been finding out.
Poirier has been given 2 weeks to form the new federal government. However, whether he will be able to meet that deadline depends to a large extent on how soon parties in Curaçao are able to form a new local government. It was the collapse of the local government of Curaçao that precipitated the fall of the federal government. Talks have been going on for several days now, with the usual behind-the-scenes maneuvering, deal-making, and jostling for positions. Failure to complete the formation of the local government will almost inevitably set back Poirier's attempts and the time frame given to him to form the federal government. For, while he is preoccupied with the politics of putting together a new government for Curaçao, Poirier must now place equal effort at forming a new federal government with the additional challenge of specific objectives set by the governor of the Netherlands Antilles. Among them, forming a government as broadly based as possible, improving relations with Holland, and initiating a plan for the financial and political restructuring of the Netherlands Antilles. Once formation of the Curaçao government is complete, and Poirier is simply a party to those talks, he will then have to devote his full attention in the time left to form the federal government. That task is loaded with complexities, as political agreements, especially the division of portfolios agreed to by the Curaçao parties, which are more than likely to be part of the next federal coalition, could very well impact on the consultations with the other islands, and especially St. Martin. In St. Martin, senators and other key players in the Democratic Party have clearly stated their preference for retaining the Finance Ministry portfolio. For BBC Caribbean Report, this is Mike Jarvis in Dutch St. Martin.
And finally, it's been reported in the United States that a Pentagon committee is recommending that the U.S. Navy be allowed to resume live-fire military training on the island of Vieques, just off Puerto Rico. And this despite objections from the government and people in San Juan. The Navy's activities were suspended in April this year after a Puerto Rican civilian guard was killed by a stray missile from the training ground. Military officials say Vieques, which they've used for 50 years, is necessary for national security. However, the Pentagon report does suggest that the island training site should be abandoned in about 5 years. U.S. Defense Secretary William Cohen is expected to call for renewed mediation with Puerto Rico on the issue. Before we go, a look at our main story once again. The latest Atlantic tropical storm, Jose, keeps residents in the southeastern Caribbean on guard. And that's it for BBC Caribbean Report. Just a reminder that
this and our other programs can be accessed on our internet website at www.bbc.co.uk/Caribbean.
And I am Keith Stone Graves saying goodbye from London.